to the East, Mondays at 5 p.m. right here on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington.
And welcome to Community Watch and Comment for Tuesday, March 11th. I'm Dave Raven. It's great to have you with us. I'm joined by our new co-host, Jana Parker, a.k.a. Parker. Later in the show, primary elections were held last week in Prince George's County. Parker will look at the results with Shayla Adams Stafford, Democratic nominee for the Prince George's County Council District 5 seat. And there's a new play opening this weekend and running through April 6th at Expat Theater, Testosterone, a comedic tale of toxic masculinity, much needed in this toxic time. We'll be joined by Expat's founder and the director of the play, Karen Rosnazek. But first, anti-Trump Musk resistance is growing, including nationwide protests against Elon Musk at Tesla dealerships. One of these protests is happening every Tuesday at a Tesla dealership in Arlington, Virginia, and the Group 14th Now is organizing a protest for this Friday on the Mall. And we're joined now by Tesla organizer Amy Markowitz and 14th Now Jessica Denson. Welcome to Community Watch and Comment. It's great to have you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It's great having you, and welcome. Well, I would say welcome, callers, but we're having some technical glitches, so unfortunately this is not going to be a Community Watch and Comment. It'll be the watch, but not the comment. Unfortunately, we're having technical problems, but we'll get you next week. I'm sorry about that. I really appreciate people chiming in, but ain't going to happen today. So Amy Markowitz, one of the organizers for the Tesla protest in Arlington, what exactly are you protesting?
So I just want to say that, you know, resistance is a group community effort. And so thank you for helping us get out the word. We are just a loosely affiliated group of people showing up and showing our opposition to Elon Musk's takeover of our federal government. We have sort of converted into an oligarchical kleptocracy. So he has billions and billions of dollars of contracts with the U.S. government, and he's opening up the treasure chests and diverting funds to himself, you know, a very unprecedented coup and an attack on our democracy. So we're really looking at making people aware. We have a ton of support from passersby, and, you know, nationwide, I think this effort is working. It's actually working across the globe. I just looked, and I understand that Tesla stock this year is down 45%. Last Monday alone, it fell 15.4%. And he's getting the message from all quarters of the globe that people oppose, you know, this king taking over and becoming an absolute dictator, what can we say? You know, boycott the swastika. We don't want to support Nazis and fascists.
I mean, do you think that actually was a Nazi salute at the inaugural ball, if you will? I mean, it's kind of wild, but I mean, your target isn't necessarily Tesla, the car. I mean, it's kind of ironic because it's an electric car, you know, which is kind of a good thing. I mean, there's ironies, paradoxes all over the place, but your target isn't so much necessarily the car itself and the car sales. The target is the fact that this unelected guy who, contributed over $250 million, $250 million, $250 million, to the Trump campaign is taking over, our federal government. I mean, it's rather bizarre.
I think we will not be bought. I think there are plenty alternatives to buying a Tesla. I am sitting right now in my electric car. It's called a Nissan Leaf. I love my car, and it's already 10 years old. The thing about Tesla, the car, is we kind of look at it and say, well, there was someone who launched an electric car that was based on innovation. But what Elon Musk is doing is stemming the tide of innovation. And if you look at our economy, what makes our economy vibrant? It is the productivity and innovation that's generated by this country. So when you, for instance, are indiscriminately firing people from NIH, where's our innovation going to be fighting the next pandemic? And when you're...
NIH, we should say, is National Institute of Health.
Yes.
There's a tremendous amount of research, very long-range research that people might not feel immediately, but we're going to feel it in the long term.
Yes, and when you're canceling visas and lending insecurity to universities, research universities across the country, we are stemming the tide of innovation. You know, our comparative advantage now is in the fact that we can innovate. And what he's trying to do is make a monopoly for himself and those of his ilk so that he will have no competition and stifle innovation that might challenge his ability to remain the richest man in the world. On all levels, Elon Musk is causing all sorts of death and destruction around the globe. And we can lay it squarely at his feet. And the one thing we can do is get out there as a group and protest and bring this up and say people still have the right and the choice to boycott his product, his signature product, may I say.
Mm-hmm. And why do you feel like your protests are going to make a difference? I mean, you know, he's an extraordinarily rich man, the richest man in the world. You know, why do you think that your protests, your individual protests out there in Arlington every Tuesday afternoon is going to make a difference?
Yes. Yeah, so these protests are growing. I understand like last Saturday, I think there was like 90-100 people outside the Tyson's Tesla dealership. I think the Trump administration, they did some sort of little lie. There was a whole blow up that the State Department was going to get a whole bunch of these armored Teslas, and then they had to scale that back in the budget and pretend that that was something that was in the Biden budget instead of what was really put in their budget. I think it really does, making these things public showing widespread condemnation is still, you know, if we go to sleep, we won't have that choice. But now is still a sensitive period where I think we can still make a difference if we resist and we speak up. You know, I'm sure your listeners are the converted, but I would say, you know, call your, if you don't want to come out to Tesla, write a postcard. There's this campaign going on called the Ides of March to flood the White House with postcards on March 15th. There's calling your congressional delegation, call every day, call every day, get Congress motivated and activated. I mean, one of the ways that Trump is making his will known is that he's going to launch competition to anyone who disagrees with him or comes from the party line or dissents from the party line. Let's make it clear that anyone who dissents from the party or goes along with these unjust policies will be removed from office in the next elections. I mean, staying quiet right now is the way that we lose our democracy.
So these protests at the Tesla in Arlington are going where exactly and when? And is it rain or shine? We need to move on to our next guest.
Yeah, so we're out there every Tesla Tuesday, you know, not Taco Tuesday, Tesla Tuesday. We're there to take down Tesla every Tuesday from 4 to 6 in front of the Tesla dealership on South Glebe Road. It's right off 395. And I know these protests are going on in other Teslas, and they're also, I do believe, going on every Saturday at Teslas around the DMV. So if that's your jam, it's there for you.
Wonderful. And that goes on, needless to say, rain or shine.
Our first week out there, it was frigid cold, but we had a good spirit, and we welcome anyone who would like to join.
Right. And check it out on Facebook, Tesla protests, and Amy Markowitz, now you got to get back to work. And we thank you so much for being with us. Stay with us if you can. And the group 14th now is organizing a Stop the Coup protest for this Friday on the Mall. 14th now, Jessica Denson, why is your group calling itself 14th now? Why that name?
Hi, David. Well, we're also a group of grassroots citizens who was born out of reporting I did on my show, Lights On, about the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which, of course, bans and bars insurrectionists from holding office. That prohibition, that disqualification was never removed by the ruling in Trump v. Anderson from SCOTUS. There's a lot of misunderstanding about that. So we actually also were out there in the frigid cold in January demanding that Congress reject Donald Trump's electors and try to stop this authoritarian coup before it started. They absolutely had the authority to do that. They did not take up that opportunity. Each and every one of those lawmakers abandoned their oath on January 6th. That said, our group has watched with horror, as has the rest of the country, as everything that we knew was promised by this disqualified insurrectionist has come to pass, and his unelected billionaire friend. And so we kind of just saw what was happening and realized we had to do this again. And we took the date 314 in honor of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, and just over the past few weeks have had the honor of planning what is going to be the first major DC demonstration against this illegal presidency, with the explicit goal of demanding that all constitutional means be employed immediately to remove Donald Trump and his illegal administration from power. We've also had veterans join us in this, so it's kind of like a joint 14th Now Veterans March. It's called Now DC, and we will be on the National Mall in very large numbers on Friday between 4th and 6th Streets Northwest. I'm really honored to be lining up a lot of amazing speakers right now, and we're just expecting to have a massive showing of We the People to reject this illegal coup we're all witnessing.
And that's at noon this Friday, correct?
It is at noon on the National Mall between 4th and 6th Streets Northwest. You can find out everything you need to know at nowmarch.org. It's nowmarch.org. You can sign up there. You can also support us financially if you'd like. It's a very, very expensive venture to put this event together. So we hope you can go to nowmarch.org.
And we should say that when we're talking about insurrectionists in terms of Donald Trump et al., we're referring to the 14th Amendment created after, I believe, the Civil War, and it banned insurrectionists, namely at that time, Civil War insurrectionists, Confederates, from running and holding office. And your organization is saying, hey, it's the same thing. Donald Trump had an insurrection, instigated an insurrection on January 6th, 2021, and he should constitutionally be barred from holding office.
Yeah, I mean, not just our organization is saying it. The Colorado Supreme Court said it. Maine Secretary of State, Illinois, also the January 6th committee, well established that Donald Trump is an insurrectionist. He is an adjudicated insurrectionist. These are the qualifications for satisfying the requirements of Section 3. There was not a conviction necessary. There was not a charge of insurrection necessary. He has been adjudicated an insurrectionist. That status was never removed by any Supreme Court ruling, and that bars him. He is currently, at this moment, an illegal president. Every order that he issues is illegal and without constitutional authority because of it.
Yeah, yeah. And what exactly is Act 14th now? What exactly are you all calling for?
We're calling for Congress, for anyone in power, I should say, David, not anybody in power, anybody who has sworn an oath to the Constitution of the United States of America, to exert any and all power to have this illegal administration removed from power immediately. One of our speakers is actually John Bonifaz, president of Free Speech for People. His organization, wonderful, wonderful organization, has initiated a campaign to back impeachment with hundreds of thousands of signatures. I think every single member of Congress should be standing alongside Representative Al Green in the demand for Donald Trump to be impeached and removed. This conversation should have been normalized on day one when he pardoned several individuals convicted of seditious conspiracy. This is what's normal. It's normal for Donald Trump to be impeached and removed from office. That's one option. An invocation of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is another. Could be raised by a simple conversation by any member of Congress. If they just had a conversation to acknowledge it, it would be understood by the American public that that disqualification is not removed, as Section 3 says, without a two-thirds vote of both houses. So there are so many tools. You know, we hear some of the Democratic kind of firebrands out there talking, but who of them, other than Al Green, is actually taking action to end this? That is what we are here to demand, peacefully demand, in numbers too large to ignore.
Got you. And who would you like to join you on Friday? You mentioned veterans. Who else besides veterans would you like to have with you on the mall on Friday?
David, we would like to have anybody living today who does not want to see the United States of America, this precious, beautiful, imperfect, but destined for equality and true justice nation, not die on their watch, join us on the National Mall. Everybody, I mean, the website, it says, if you have changed your mind since the election, this is for you. If you are afraid of losing your Social Security, this is for you. If you stand with Ukraine in the free world, this is for you. If you were deprived of your vote in 2024 because of voter suppression or manipulation, this movement is for you. This movement is for everyone, David. And I really, really hope that people understand what a precious, you know, a lot of times we think of the times we live in as dire and hopeless. But if you kind of look at the flip side of that and see what an honor and opportunity is bestowed on each one of us in a historical context and just in a spiritual and moral one, to take a stand and to be the ones who the history books are written about. It's really an incredible honor. So I hope that everybody listening and really everybody just joins us in seizing that honor, reclaiming the power of we the people and demanding an end to this illegal coup.
And 14th now, Jessica Denson, where could, you mentioned it, but once again, where can people get more information about the Friday at noon protest on the mall?
Yep, it's at nowmarch.org, nowmarch.org.
Wonderful. I've been speaking with Amy Markowitz and Jessica Denson. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
Great having you. And next, our new co-host, Jana Parker, a.k.a. Parker, has an important topic and guest. Take it away, Parker.
Oh, thank you, Dave. Yes. So I'm so excited to be on here today. We'll be discussing an important topic to many of our listeners in Prince George's County. The recent special primary elections in the county for the county executive seat vacated when the previous county executive, Angela Alsobrooks, moved to the U.S. Senate seat. But also there is another primary election in Prince George's County that was for the county council seat for District 5 that was vacated when the former District 5 representative for County Council, Jolene Ivey, ran for and won an at-large seat that came available within the last 16 months. It is a point to note that after winning the at-large County Council seat, within less than 16 months, Jolene Ivey also ran for the open County Executive seat before dropping out of the race weeks prior to the primary voting date. Today, we will have the Democratic nominee for District 5 County Council seat, Shayla Adams Stafford. To note, we are not endorsing any candidates in any race, particularly for District 5, the County Council, and we will invite the Republican nominee, Fred Price, to join us on the show as well. But today, we are joined by Shayla Adams Stafford. Shayla Adams Stafford, Mrs. Shayla Adams Stafford, welcome to Community Watch and Comment. Also, welcome callers. We would love to hear from you, or we'd love to let you listen in. So, go ahead and let's start. Let's jump right in. Shayla Adams, you have been in politics for years at this point, having been a board member on the Prince George's County Public Schools. Let's start with you telling us about your journey in relation to entering politics. Let's start there.
Yes, definitely. Well, first of all, thank you so much, David and Jana, for having me here today. And it's just an honor to have an opportunity to talk to you and your listeners. And, you know, talking about my journey into politics, well, let's begin by saying it takes someone to ask a woman seven times to run for office before she accepts, and especially someone who is, I was just a new mom when I first ran for office, and it was, there was, the pandemic was happening, there was just so much going on, but I knew that, there needed to be some change, particularly in our school system, especially serving our students that are often the most vulnerable and communities that are often overlooked. And so, you know, my community felt that my experience working as a public school educator and nonprofit leader, specifically with those populations, would well prepare me for this position. You know, that's when I leaped forward, you know, definitely at the urging of my community. And so, yeah, that was sort of how I jumped into politics, and I ran during the pandemic. It was very challenging. folks knocked doors and made a lot of phone calls, and we won. And that was back in 2020, and there was a group of progressive, you know, leaders that also were elected during that time. And we came in, you know, really with a mandate to bring forward policies that the community wanted. So we really worked on removing armed officers from our schools. We also worked on ending the school-to-prison pipeline and finding ways to, you know, provide more funding for restorative practice work within schools. We also passed, you know, a $3 million mental health amendment to staff all of our schools with at least one mental health professional. We also worked on, you know, reallocating funds towards schools that had the highest need. Our Bridge to Excellence schools, you know, providing them with a $10 million budget amendment to provide more wraparound services. And so that was, you know, a way to come in. And one of the things that I focused on specifically was, you know, developing something called our Equity Learning Hubs, which were essentially these hubs that allowed, you know, students that were not able to connect with the online learning, giving them a chance for in-person learning support. And it was so crazy because, you know, during that time, all students were online learning. We had thousands of kids that weren't attending school. You know, we had thousands of kids that were not logging in and weren't getting the content delivered. And this was primarily because, number one, they either had parents that were working and couldn't support them with, you know, getting online. They didn't have access to high speed internet. They were taking care of children themselves. It was a challenging time, but those equity learning hubs, we were able to service thousands of children and provide them with the support they needed. So
I wanted to, that's amazing. I wanted to come kind of circle back. You said that someone asked you 7 times to run for office. I know that's the average. Is that how many times you got asked?
I feel like every time I have run, there have been more than a few asks. And I think it's sometimes because, you know, it is intimidating to put yourself out there and to talk about yourself and what you've done and your vision. And so it's not natural for people that are just, that didn't begin their life thinking that they were going to go into politics. And so it does take some urging.
So I wanted to talk, you touched on your time on the school board. I know that just with the way that the law is written, you had to resign in order to run for this particular seat. But can you kind of explain just like what your vision was on the school board? And I know you talked about the things that you did, but can you talk about how you used your vision to, I guess, collaborate with your colleagues and then what that kind of working dynamic looked like and how important that was for just our residents and our school system?
Yes. I mean, I think folks know that we were a board that was divided. You know, we had a half appointed board and half elected. And one of the things that I worked on that I feel like, you know, we're not talking about enough right now in the county is, you know, the work that myself and many other people did to bring back a democratic school board, like a democratically elected school board. I mean, the schools are what touch people the most poignantly, right? Because you were talking about people's children and people wanted to have a say in who was developing the policies that impact their children. And so for too long, that power was taken away from the people. And, you know, we worked, and this was something that we worked on by lobbying in Annapolis, by, you know, pulling the community together, pulling other groups together to change that. And so that meant changing the law, and that meant changing hearts and minds within a work group, and then changing the law, and then, you know, actually doing it. And then, you know, helping other progressive educators get elected. You know, that was certainly, you know, a major accomplishment. And now when it comes to policymaking, I'll say working with folks that don't always see eye to eye with you. I mean, think looking at data, I think has been what I've tried to lead with, pulling up, you know, the statistics, the data. You know, one thing that we passed was funding for community, well, school-based health clinics. And I mean, I think that when you look at the data that, you know, this is a major challenge that we have in our county is access to quality health care, and school-based health clinics can provide that for families of school children. And you look at the fact that Prince George's County has 4 of these clinics, Montgomery County has 17, and Baltimore has 20, and all of ours are defunct. I mean, even with the passage of that amendment, I don't think they're up and running yet. But I think that when people look at that data and they're able to see, you know, how we are in comparison to other places, it becomes a no-brainer. And so I've always just tried to lead with data, even with folks that may not agree with me. So
I think it's important to focus on how the data informs and impacts our decisions, particularly as we move forward as a county. So I appreciate you bringing that in. So you've been on the school board since about 2021, and you've been working hard, you're doing everything, and all of a sudden District 5 seat, not all of a sudden, but the seat becomes available. And so walk us through your decision to leave the school board that you've been doing so much great work in and go into a higher office. And right before you do, I just want to remind everybody that, you know, I'm Parker And I am talking to the Democratic nominee for the Prince George's County county seat for District 5. For those who are watching, listening, commenting along, thank you so much for joining us today. And so subsequently, yeah, walk us through your decision to leave the school board and run for higher office on the county council.
Yeah, so I mean, this was definitely something I did not take lightly. I had to weigh on this for sure because I just had my third child in August. And, you know, I was considering this, you know, thinking about it. And what I did was I talked to my community. Instead of me just jumping in the ring, you know, I sat and talked to thousands of people, phone called, phone banked, door knocked, and just talked to people. And I asked them, I said, look, this seat might become available. And, you know, I could run for this. And these are some of the things that I would want to focus on. And I'd like to know, you know, what your sort of things that you'd like to see change in our community. And what are some of the areas that you'd like to see strengthened? And I talked to folks and I asked them, you know, if this becomes available, would you support me running? Do you think I should do this? And the overwhelming response was, yes, we want to see you go to higher office. We think you can do it. We need your voice on the council. We love what you've done on the school board. And that's where we want to see you go next. And so I really just tried to get as much support as I could for my community before putting my hat in the ring.
Okay, so once you talked to your community and they said, hey, we want you to do it, we want you to throw your hat in the ring, what was the conversation? Because you did mention that you're a new mom again. Congratulations. Yeah. I think you have two beautiful daughters and a lovely son. So what was the conversation as, you know, and it's so interesting because we always ask women, like, what's the conversation in your family household? And that doesn't necessarily have a question for men, but it is important for our viewers on Community Watch and comment to kind of know, like, what was the process for you? You know, this is a very different office to an extent from the school board. So what was that conversation like within your family dynamic as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think my family, they think that I can do anything. And my family, they say, Shayla, come on, you got this. Like, you can do it. And I'm like, y'all, I don't think I can, but I do have a very strong support system. I have a very strong extended family. My husband is, you know, my partner, and we work together on everything. So, you know, he felt like I could handle it. And there are certainly times like within the campaign where I was breaking down. I said, listen, I can't knock on one more door. I'm tired. You know, I can't make another phone call. You know, and so having a really strong support network, as I mentioned, my husband, my extended family, and then I also have my faith. You know, I definitely prayed a lot about this, and I asked the Lord. I said, look, if it's your will for me to do this, then let it be done. Let's put this in God's hands, because, you know, there's only so much we can do as humans. You know, in my faith, I believe that God will carry the rest. And so I certainly, you know, it was not an easy road. It definitely required a lot of organization, a lot of planning, and a lot of leaning on existing support networks. And I was going to say 10 out of 10, 0 out of 10, do not recommend running for office directly after a baby. But this particular opportunity, I felt I could serve my community in a much stronger way. And I had the support of my community. So I felt like I could do it.
That's awesome. Definitely a 10 out of 10. And that goes for any men out there whose wives have just had a baby. 10 out of 10, you need to stay at home and help. Help a lot. But no, great. Thank you so much for that. So, okay, you have won the Democratic nomination. You still have a general election to go against a Republican nominee as well, who we will have on the show at some point, because we are a radio that's going to give everybody the balance, right? But let's talk about if you were to win the seat, right? You would be coming into the county council during a time that many would say is very stressful for our county, with things that are happening on the national level, on the state level, in context to the fact that Prince George's County is a very federal job heavy area, and there are being drastic cuts made or attempts to drastic cuts being made to federal jobs, as well as the deficit on the state level that is going to trickle down to our county. So, that is a lot. So should you win this seat, if you were to win the seat, where do you feel our county is now? And then what are your specific plans in regards to the direction that we need to take our county moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I try to keep an optimistic view in the face of a lot of the challenge that we are facing. You know, number one, we need to support our federal workers. So as I knocked on doors talking to community members, we have so many federal workers in this community that, you know, are wondering how they're going to pay their mortgage, how they're going to survive. And so providing consistent resources for our community, ensuring that we, you know, support them, you know, not just financially, but also, you know, there needs to be some mental health support, some just general resources that folks can access as they navigate this difficult time. I'd also say helping folks to find new career pathways, specifically thinking about supporting our school system, which right now has an urgent need for educators. Also within our county government and our local governments, how we can take some of that amazing expertise of our federal workers who are amazingly qualified. I would like to let those in power know, okay, letting them know that our federal workers are amazing and they can do so many great things and have done so many amazing things. And let's put them into positions where they can be successful here locally. I would say we also are facing challenges around just, you know, economic growth and development. So, you know, there's a possibility of losing the Commander Stadium. There's the possibility that the FBI building may not come through. You know, we're facing changes in bond ratings and debt, and all of those items are converging all at once, right? But I think this is a great opportunity for us to build from within and to look at other ways that we can strengthen our own community. I always feel like, you know, we need to look within ourselves first to see where we can bolster our own community. So for example, in some areas in my district, we have food deserts in areas where people cannot get access to, you know, their medications and whatnot. So one of the things I'd like to do is look into how might we, you know, as a county, develop our own grocery stores or farmers markets that, you know, could then provide food to communities that are in need, sourcing our own local farms. We have farms here in our county. How might we be able to support communities using the resources that we already have here? How might we be able to develop social housing programs? We can look to our neighbors in Montgomery County that have, you know, projects that are similarly situated that are supporting some of our first responders and teachers, helping them to gain access to their first home, but then also subsidizing costs of living. But what I would say would be how might we be able to bring in some resources for social housing and thinking about housing for all. I'd also say, additionally, I see opportunities for business development. You know, we have a lot of, you know, I'm a business owner and we have a lot of business owners here in our community and many people are operating businesses out of their homes, you know, and one of the challenges that we also find in the commercial real estate spaces that we have all these vacant commercial real estate properties. How can we provide maybe a subsidy or a reduced leasing rent for people in encouraging people to move their businesses from their homes into offices? How might we be able to bring businesses from Baltimore and other regions to Prince George's County, particularly eating establishments, because that's one of the things we continuously hear. You know, people in our community want more variety and what they have to choose and to eat from. you know, giving folks a reason and a incentive to come here to build their business. And then also looking at what are some of the barriers that are stopping us from having strong economic development, which are often our permitting offices, and how can we streamline the work that's happening in DPI, and how can we make it more effective and more efficient, looking at other neighboring jurisdictions, whether they're using AI, you know, creating a fast track process that we know can be used because we use that to build schools with the P3. How can we take out some of the redundancy within our permitting offices so we can then support our business development and growth in many ways?
Oh, thank you so much for that. We're running low on time. And so I just wanted to thank you so much for coming out again. This is our community watch and comment show. And we did have the Prince George's County Democratic nominee for the county council seat for District 5. We will be reaching out to the Republican nominee, Fred Price, and have him on the show as when he is available to hear from him and get his stance on the community and what he's going to do. But as we transition out, Ms. Shayla Stafford, what are your final thoughts that you'd like to leave the county residents with, please?
Yes, you know, I just think that in these times where it can seem very bleak and dismal at the federal level, and we're being bombarded with these images and executive orders, and often for many people it can just feel like there doesn't seem to be any hope. What I would say would be, we definitely have faced stronger hurdles in the past. Our community is resilient. We can overcome this, and we need to recognize what is happening. There is this sort of freeze that we're in, where we're just being bombarded again with all of this that's happening at the federal level, but we can't let that prevent us from organizing, from coming together and building community with one another and supporting one another, so that we'll be ready to make the change that's necessary to support our community when we need to. So again, I'm just really grateful for everyone that came out and supported me during this past election and cast their vote. And I'm really looking forward to tackling some of these issues, particularly issues around infrastructure, economic development, and housing here and in District 5.
Oh, thank you so much. I put my mute on. Thank you so much. We're going to take one question from the audience that kind of got sent in. There was a question around, do you intend on having, read this out, do you intend on having a debate with the other nominee? And if so, what are some things that you want to pull out in context to yourself? Sorry, we just had one question sent in.
Sure, I'm open to debating, and I'd love to talk about, you know, our vision for District 5 particularly. I'm thinking about a lot of what I heard as I was out knocking doors, health access. A lot of our residents are senior citizens, and they are concerned about the hospital wait times. They're concerned about their access to fresh food and getting their prescriptions in pharmacies. And so I'd love to talk about that. And I'd also love to talk about just infrastructure for our schools, which is one of the main reasons that I'm running. You know, my child is in public schools, and you know, the buildings that our students and our teachers go into every day, we need to fully fund the blueprint and fully fund our school system in our capital improvement program so that they can be able to build the schools at the rate that we need them to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you so much. And again, we just had that kind of one question. And so I just wanted to reach out to and say hi to our listeners, our faithful listeners on Community Watch and Comment. I am Parker, and I'm joined by Dave Raban, and we did have on the Democratic nominee for Prince George's County Council, District 5, for the seat that was open. We will reach out to the Republican nominee to have him on, to have him discuss his platform and things of that nature. And we just want to make sure everyone is aware that there will be a general election in about June for this seat, as well as a general election in June for the county executive seat. Thank you guys so much for joining us. I'm going to pass it back to my partner, Dave Raven, to kind of finish up. Thank you guys so much. And see you soon.
Great. Terrific. Great having the candidate on. We really appreciate it. We're going to take a music break. We don't have our next guest quite yet. Hopefully we will get her and listen to hopefully some music that our talented Mike Nocella, our engineer, will provide. And we should be back with you shortly. Stay tuned. Do not touch that dial. Ciao.
African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora is featured at the 21st New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 14 to the 27th. The festival features 29 films from 19 countries, discussions with filmmakers, and more. The 2025 New African Film Festival features the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa. Tickets and full schedule at afi.com/silver. That's afi.com/silver or at 301-495-6700. That's 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Diversity Fund is a grassroots grant source for changemakers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, March 21st. Details and application information are available at www.diversityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and recordings are accessible online at www.diversityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Please join the WPFW family as we celebrate the life of Larry Applebaum, longtime host of The Sound of Surprise. Friends, colleagues, and coworkers will gather to remember Larry and his tremendous contributions to WPFW, the Library of Congress, and the jazz world at large. Music will be provided by DC's own Paul Carr and friends. Sunday, March 23rd, beginning at 2 p.m., at Westminster Presbyterian Church, 400 I Street Southwest, Washington, D.C. For more information, please go to WPFWFM.org.
Community Watch and Comment. I'm Dave Raven. Thank you, Parker, for that wonderful interview. There's an edgy play opening this weekend and running through April 6th at Expats Theater, Testosterone, a comedic tale of toxic masculinity. You can see it at the Atlas Performing Arts Center in the heart of D.C.'s 8th Street Northeast Corridor. And we're joined now by Expat Theater's founder and the director of the play, Karen Rosnazek. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me again, David.
It's great having you. And let's talk about Expat Theater just real quickly. Your motto is a small theater grappling with big ideas. That's a wonderful model. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, thank you. That is something that actually somebody else came up with just by describing it on the side, and I just took it. It's small because I'm doing two performances a year, and I don't even want to be a big house because that limits you in many ways. You can then grapple with a big budget instead with big ideas, and I'd rather grapple with big ideas. I mean, it doesn't mean I don't need any money, but I may grow, but at the moment I'm still grappling, and the ideas get bigger and bigger. So maybe the budget needs to get bigger.
Well, all in due time, all in due time. You're young and relatively speaking, your current play deals with testosterone. I mean, arguably, you plan this well in advance, but it's a pretty interesting topic given what's floating around these days with the Trump administration.
Yes, that title definitely, plays to it. And it is also that there is a lot of toxic masculinity in the play. But it's not only it's not the focus of the play. The play's focus is really the differences between the root problem is the rich and poor, really. And then you have these two worlds where one world is really kind of a high tech security fortress where one family lives, and then in the other world, there are the criminals or the outcasts, the poor people, and that's called bad neighborhood. So we have good neighborhood and bad neighborhood. And in this good neighborhood, there lives a father, Fabian, who is the patriarch, and he has two sons, Ingo, who is the good son. He's a doctor. He's accomplished. And the bad son, Raul, lives in bad neighborhood. He's also accomplished, but in different ways. So he's probably killed a lot of people, and he's the most feared person in that neighborhood. And his problem is he can't feel fear. And now I'm coming back to the fact that this play is based on a Grimm's Brothers tale called The One Who Went Forth to Learn Fear. So the playwright, Rebecca Krickeldorf, who's German, reimagines that tale and places it into a somewhat dystopian world where the one family lives in the kind of, high security world, ghetto, if you will, and the others in the bad neighborhood. And the problems arise when those worlds collide, because the father and Ingo need their son Raul for a dirty job, and that's when everything turns upside down.
And it sounds extremely heavy, extremely intense, but it is in fact comedic.
If you could
just
absolutely
touch on that. We just have a hard time. If you could touch on that.
Yeah, it's a hilarious comedy. I mean, she calls it a dark parable. Rebecca calls it a dark parable, but it's, it has definitely a lot of social satire in it. It's pitch dark at places. There are no real fight scenes, but there are gross scenes, and there is, what you would call gross in a silly way. And there are scenes where, you can just see when when the Western hero comes, or when we parody things like Rambo or something else. The other thing that I liked about the play is that Rebecca Krickeldorf's sense of humor or sense of comedy or use of comedy is not a comedy where, you kind of say, oh, these are bad, ha, 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 we laugh about a certain group of people. It's more, she doesn't really spare anyone. And so we become, the human apes that somebody sits on a tree and laughs about. And so we are also completely included. One thing that is really very well criticized is, all sorts of classisms and all sorts of, wealthy do-goodery, what I called it in the description, meaning if you are living in Fat City, in your fortress, then you can really be very, very nice and help people. But you, of course, only help people to a certain extent, not that you get uncomfortable or something, you know. So, and that's what we all do in a way, partly because there's just maybe no other way, because the world is so absurd, and that absurdity really comes out.
Wonderful. And just where we are out of time, the name of the grim fairy tale that this is based on is what again?
The Brother Who Went Forth to Learn Fear. The Brother.
Wonderful. Check it out. We've been speaking with Expats Theater founder and director of Testosterone, Karen Rosnizek. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate it too, so much. Thank you again.
It's running March 15th till April 6th. That's going to do it for our show. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Dave Rabin. Stay safe. Have a great week. We'll see you next week.
Filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora is featured at the 21st New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 14th to the 27th. The festival features 29 films from 19 countries, discussions with filmmakers, and more. The 2025 New African Film Festival features the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa. Tickets and full schedule at afi.com/silver. That's afi.com/silver or at 301-495-6700. That's 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Diversity Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, March 21st. Details and application information are available at www.diversityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and recordings are accessible online at www.diversityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Code Pink, Women for Peace is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at wpfwfm.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at wpfwfm.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Please join the WPFW family as we celebrate the life of Larry Applebaum, longtime host of The Sound of Surprise. Friends, colleagues, and coworkers will gather to remember Larry and his tremendous contributions to WPFW, the Library of Congress, and the jazz world at large. Music will be provided by DC's own Paul Carr and friends. Sunday, March 23rd, beginning at 2 p.m. at Westminster Presbyterian Church, 400 I Street Southwest, Washington, D.C. For more information, please go to wpfwfm.org.